Thank you all for standing by, and welcome to the Ocado Limited December 2019 quarterly market update. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question via the phones, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. If you wish to ask a question via the webcast, please type your question into the ask a question box. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Martin Perez de Solay, Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Ben. I would like to welcome you to our Ocado's activities briefing for the December 2019 quarter. Despite challenging lithium market conditions continuing throughout the quarter, Oro Cobre delivered strong results. Key achievements including reduced operating costs, positive operational cash flow, and significant progress on both growth projects at the Naraha lithium hydroxide plant and Olaroz Stage 2 expansion. We remain on track to deliver expected production for fiscal year 2020. Safety, along with productivity and quality, remains our key focus. With increase in Stage 2 expansion-related activities, additional measures are being put in place to mitigate the increased risk of safety incidents occurring during construction. Significant improvement has been made with reporting of safety observations using Intellex, our cloud-based central safety management database. We also continue to make good progress in operating discipline via specialized training programs and more frequent risk assessments. This has already produced greater consistency in the quality of our products. Two incidents occurred at Olaroz during the quarter, resulting in lost time injuries. Since then, Olaroz has achieved 41 days without an LTI. Borax recorded no LTIs during the December quarter. Moving on to the results for the December quarter, recognizing current adverse market conditions, our operational focus has been on process stability and product quality. This has allowed further development of the pond system and brine inventory to improve operational resilience, even though seasonal weather variations. The Olaroz lithium facility produced 3,586 tons, down from 3,782 tons on the previous corresponding period. Production for the December quarter has been slightly below budget due to inventory control. However, production for the first half of fiscal year 2020 is 186 tons above budget, driven by more stable lithium-grade brine delivered into the plant. Quarterly sales revenue was $17.8 million, down 19% quarter-on-quarter, with a realized average price of $5,419 per ton on a free on board basis. Our December quarter product pricing was below that of September quarter due to continued market softness. However, our sales volume for the quarter was up 6% quarter-on-quarter to 3,287 tons. Gross cash margins, excluding the Argentinian export tax, were $1,310 per ton. This represents 24% of revenue, down 41% quarter-on-quarter due to the lower average price. Cash costs for the quarter were down 16% to $4,109 per ton from the previous quarter. Moving on to the lithium growth projects, the Naraha lithium hydroxide plant is progressing well, with more than 40% of plant works now completed. Construction is expected to accelerate during the March quarter, as more than 95% of equipment purchase orders have now been placed. Civil and architectural construction of several key plant components commenced during the quarter. This included construction of lithium carbonate and hydroxide storage facilities, a wastewater treatment plant, the kiln structure, and liquid carbon dioxide storage foundations. As of 31 December, approximately $39.3 million have been spent on the first phase of engineering, civil works, and procurement at the Naraha plant. This expenditure includes the first two progress payments made to Veolia. The construction of key items for the Stage 2 expansion continued throughout the quarter. This included brine transport system, ponds, rain diversion channels, new production wells and associated infrastructure. As of 31 December, approximately $105 million have been spent on the first phase of the expansion activities. Moving on to the lithium market, conditions have remained challenging for most of the December quarter. We did, however, see some encouraging demand indicators and supply curtailments emerging in late 2019 and early 2020. These are expected to progressively improve the market balance this year. We expect to see weak market conditions continuing for the first half of this year. There is potential for improved market balance arising in the second half of 2020. In the short term, higher than normal inventory levels in some part of the supply chain are expected to subdue price recovery. This is likely to conceal any underlying improvements in demand. However, an acceleration in market demand growth is expected in the medium term. This will be driven by improvement in EV manufacturing profitability and better battery technology within the EV and energy storage system segments. Moving on, Borax Argentina continues to deliver new supply agreements with world-class players in the fertilizer and industrial sectors. New product distributors are being developed throughout Asia. Unit costs continue to be controlled. A total of 8,614 tons were sold in the December quarter. The average price received was down 3% quarter on quarter due to a decrease of sales in the high-priced Brazilian market. From the corporate side, Borocover's 2019 annual general meeting was held on Friday, November 22nd, with all results successfully passed as ordinary resolutions following a poll at the meeting. At the end of the quarter, Borocover Corporate had available cash of $171.9 million. The $51.6 million cash reduction was a result of expenditure related to Olaroz expansion activities, repayment of local U.S. dollar loans due to new currency control legislation implemented by the Argentine government, and corporate costs. Net group cash at 31 December 2019 was $115.5 million, down from $151.2 million at 30 September 2019, following provision for shareholder loans to fund Stage 2 expansion activities. Overall, this has been another robust quarter for Orocobre, delivering strong operational results, good progress on the construction of Stage 2 expansion and Naraha lithium hydroxide plant. I will now hand back to the operator for questions. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Joel Jackson of BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Bria Murphy on for Joel Jackson. Thanks for taking my question. I know you mentioned in the release that you're going to give more color on March quarter pricing with the half-year results, but can you give any sense of how pricing has trended this quarter, even directionally?
Thank you for your question, Joel. David is more versed into the market to answer this question in more detail. We continue to see a weak market, as I said in the initial part of the call, and the recovery signs should come in the second half of the calendar year. I don't know, David, if you want to add something on that regard.
I think, Martin, it's more of the same is what we're seeing at this stage, although we're still finalising some agreements with customers for the March quarter, but I think to sum it up, it's basically more of the same at this stage.
Okay, thank you. And then just on the production mix in the December quarter between primary and purified products, and then how you expect us to look in the March quarter also.
David can correct me if I'm wrong, the split of the sales for the quarter was around 80% primary product, 20% purified. And in the March quarter, seems to be similar to that, something basically what David said, we're going to see a very similar market.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Nick Herbert of Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi there, guys. Might just start on costs, please. The cost-out program that you mentioned that was implemented at quarter end, just wondering if you could give some more detail around what that consists of and the magnitude of any cost-outs targeted.
Well, the key items where we worked have been the variable costs in terms of use of reagents and improving plant efficiency and plant recovery in that regard have helped. And also trimming down some of the fixed costs. However, fixed costs in Argentina are impacted by inflation and devaluation. We've benefited on devaluation towards the end of the quarter. Now it's the movement of the peso is flat. And going forward, we will continue to seek further opportunities of cost reduction. I think I've said this before. The name of the business for us, our main competitive advantage, is to remain at the bottom end of the cost curve. So that's what we aim to do and continue to do. So a little bit of everything that was at hand, and we'll continue to do more in that regard.
Okay, thank you. And then maybe just a couple on pricing. The long-term contracts that you announced, are you able to give an indication of the price floor and how far away that is from current spot market pricing?
David, you can...
I think all we can really say is that it's determined under a mechanism that will track market price, and that's really the extent of what I can tell you under commercial confidentiality provisions within those contracts.
Okay, fair enough. And then finally, just do you mind just talking a little bit to the price differential that you're receiving between your primary and battery grade product, how that's trending, and then also difference in price between your standard battery grade and that micronized product that you refer to that I think is part of one of those long-term contracts also?
Yeah, look, I can't really get into too much detail about the difference between purified and micronized. It's really it depends on how the customers are actually using those products in their application, which is in both cases is cathode manufacture. In terms of the gap between industrial and purified product, it's largely remained typically around the same as it has been historically. You could potentially say it's that the gap squeezed up a little bit as the market price has come down.
Got it. Okay. Thanks, guys. That's it for me.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Reg Spencer of Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning, guys. Just a bit of a follow-on from Nick's questions. With that market-linked formula that you refer to for your new long-term contracts, is that how is market defined? Because we know there is quite a difference between pricing or market pricing in China and that ex-China, given that it's going to cathode manufacturers, you know, would be getting a price premium, I would have thought, over your technical grade product. But David, this is maybe one for you. Is that a global market price? Is that a China-specific market price? Or just trying to dive into that a little bit deeper, please.
Yeah, again, Reg, I'm a little bit limited in what I can tell you here, obviously, under the confidentiality provisions within each of those contracts. What I can say is that the market pricing formula is linked to the market in which the customers operate. So obviously they're both in the cathode market space, and I can also say that's not necessarily limited to the Chinese market.
Okay, now that's very useful. Next question is just one on costs. Are you able to split out for me the improvement in cost that you're getting from the lower reagents versus those external factors as you highlighted, like the currency and inflation?
Neil, can you provide a split on those, please?
Yeah, well, basically, if at a very high level, without getting into too much detail, Reg, you take about a 50-50% on that in terms of where the devaluation. There was a severe devaluation, as you know, in late September. It's the inventory that was carried forward and sold into Q2. So there was the benefit of that devaluation, as well as the various initiatives related to CAM contractors, renegotiation of reagent contracts, as well as the factors of those reagents that are used in the process that were reduced. So at a high level, I'd go with approximately 50. It's 55, 45. Devaluation is probably about 45%, but that's basically the split.
If we strip out that... Sorry, Martin.
No, we're saying that based on what Neil mentioned, we've been impacted positively by devaluation, and we're continuing to work towards further reducing the costs.
Understood. I guess that leads to my next question then. Going forward, if we strip out the impact of that devaluation, in terms of percentage, are you able to sort of quantify how much further you think those unit costs or those reagent costs could fall from current levels, and i.e., can current production costs be maintained at current levels?
What I'd say, Reg, is we continue to cut costs and shave them. However, we don't want to put a percentage on that. I think that would be the wrong thing to do. We are obviously affected by outside factors, as devaluation, as inflation. We got to increase salaries, which we just had a salary increase now in January. So don't want to put a percentage on that right now, but we are in the middle of a cost reduction plan, which is widespread across the company. And we're not going to put a percentage on that right now. Because we've just got to see what we can maintain and what we can cut close to the bone and operate efficiently with. So I think it would be the wrong thing to be putting a percentage on that right now.
Understood.
Yeah, if I can give some more information on that particular, when you talk about improved efficiencies and else, a significant amount of the work has been done in terms of physical units. In terms of costs, as Neil mentioned, some of the reagent costs have been renegotiated with suppliers. Yes, there's more to improve, but in terms of physical volumes, to a large extent, we've done most of the work already. We are now working on the fixed costs, which are the ones that are more sensitive to inflation and devaluation rate, how they perform to each other.
Okay, that's useful. Thank you. And just lastly, very quickly, Martin, you previously mentioned that you're undertaking I'm not going to call it a study, but a review of the timelines and CapEx and OpEx for the Stage 2 at Olaroz. Is there any update on when you expect to complete that? And given how we've seen the currency devaluation and inflation in Argentina in the last 12 months, can we presume that there will be some change to CapEx and OpEx versus those that were previously put into the market?
We are pretty much advanced with the ponds construction, so don't expect significant changes in the number of for pond construction, despite it's subject to peso and dollar. On most of the equipment that is being imported and buildings that are being imported as well, it's all dollar denominated. So apart from some scope changes that we are making to factoring learning from stage one into stage two, should be around the same. Construction contract is a large one, and we should start to negotiate the details of that contract that will be impacted by peso devaluation shortly. So all in all, it may take us another 4 months to be able to get clear number, which in any case is obviously going to be impacted by the exchange rate between pesos and dollars and inflation, and the relative appreciation or depreciation of the currency will impact significantly on that last bit of cost.
Okay, and just on the timeline as it stands, are you still comfortable with that prior timeline, or you think there may be some slippage there?
Well, it has been moving slightly towards mechanical completion in the first half of 2021, and we should see production coming out in the second half of 2021.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Glyn Lawcock of UBS Investment Bank. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Martin. Just had a follow-up question to Reg. If you could make some similar comments on Naraha. You say 40% of planned work's done. Just wondering how you're tracking against budget and schedule for Naraha as well. And then my second question, I noticed you say in your release, market quality and specification requirements continue to evolve. I just wonder if you or David could elaborate on what you mean specifically, and is there any risk to Olaroz product meeting those changing specs? I recall, I think your long-term plan is 17,500 tonnes to the battery market, 15 to technical and 10 to the hydroxide plant. Just wondering if any of that's changing too with the way you see the market evolving. Thanks.
Basically, Glyn, thank you very much for your questions on the progress on Naraha. It is the way we're measuring that with an S curve, comparing total project budget against amount of expenditure in the project, and we are roughly around 40%. And the S curve of cost is very similar to the S curve of work progress. In the case of Olaroz, we have some advances made to suppliers of equipment, which make that the expense is running ahead of actual completion of the works on site because of the advances that were made to suppliers. Briefly on quality before letting David talk about the details, we did cover this in the past when we talked about the way the market has increased their requirements on reducing magnetic pads, and a huge work was done at the plant to be able to keep up with those increased customer requirements. We are continuing to see our product meeting more and more of the customer specifications. I think that the most important part of the two long-term contracts that were achieved is that the product is battery-grade product being delivered to top-end cathode manufacturers. And the reason why we achieve those contracts is because we reach stable quality around customer requirements. So that is it. We call it the mantra here, which is safety, quality, and productivity. And everybody around Olaroz is working around those three objectives. And a lot of work around quality was imposed by Helsen Porter, who is our COO, during the last two quarters, and we're seeing good results, which I think you can touch with the two long-term contracts that were signed with top-end cathode manufacturers. I'll let you, David, continue on that.
Well, look, only a short comment to add, really, Martin. Glyn, it's, as you know, the game really is around impurity control. So as technology improves around cathodes and battery chemistries, then the requirements around the impurities tighten up. But that's an incremental development, so it's not a step change type scenario.
Sorry, can I just ask a follow-up, Martin, if I may? I was in China 2 weeks ago, and I got a sense that some of the cathode manufacturers were preferring hydroxide to carbonate. When you say it's going into top-end cathode producers, are they producing like high-end batteries like 811, or is it, are you going to be able to penetrate the very top end if that's where we go, high-performance batteries? I guess I'm just trying to comprehend the comments that came out. Admittedly, it was just one cathode producer in China. Thanks.
The objective to reach that very top end of cathode manufacturers working out of hydroxide is going to be achieved with the hydroxide plant we're building in Japan. David, if you can give some more details about the type of batteries that these cathode manufacturers are working for without breaching any confidentiality.
Sure. I think, Glenn, it comes back to cathode type and chemistry. 811 clearly requires hydroxide versus carbonate, but when you look at cathodes like, you know, 622 as an example and 532, there's applications for both carbonate and hydroxide, and there's been a lot of technological development around those cathodes in recent times, and also on the anode side of the battery, using those cathode chemistries to boost battery performance. So it's very much an evolving picture on the technology side related to batteries, but if you're looking specifically at 811, well, you know, that really is a hydroxide story.
Okay, so you wouldn't see any issues with the 17,500 tonnes of battery-grade carbonate being able to place that, because I guess your two recent contracts are about 3,000 tonnes per annum, so it's like 20% of what you've planned to produce. You don't see any issues with that remaining 80 being able to place it and get it away?
No, we don't, and it's, you know, it goes back to what we were talking about before with you know, just keeping pace with what the market requirements are around impurity control. So it's, you know, just keeping pace with that and making sure that we're, you know, producing what the market requires.
Okay, thanks for the colour. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Harsh Bhatia of Citi. Please go ahead.
Morning, everyone. Just a quick question on Borex. Does this division require further support from the group, given weaker local Brazilian market? I believe the target was to make this self-sufficient from cash flow perspective. And is it still a core business for Cobre? Thanks.
We maintain the same position we kept with Borax. The objective was to make it cash flow positive. In the last quarter, we have seen a lower amount of sales in the Brazilian market, which is very important for us. The lower Brazilian market is expected to recuperate, and we're continuing to look into alternatives to improve Borax performance and you know, moving beyond cash flow break-even to real cash flow positive.
Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a phone question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. If you wish to ask a question via the webcast, please type your question into the Ask a Question box. Your next question comes from Levi Spry of JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, Martine and David. Some good questions there. Can I just take you back to markets? So it seems a pretty consistent theme that all of the industry is talking about a second half recovery in prices. Can I draw you on it a little bit more? Why? What are inventories? You say they're higher than normal. How much higher than normal are they? What are customers saying? Are they seeing increased demand for their products in the second half? Or can you give us a little bit more on just second half's better?
Sure, Levi. Look, it's largely linked to the announcements out of the OEMs in relation to EV development and range development. That's one aspect here. I mean, there's been some good news in the market that we detailed in the quarterly in regard to, you know, Tesla and their ongoing expansion in regard to general economic conditions. You've got, you know, phase one of the China-US trade deal, which is, you know, definitely a positive and should assist with increase in in Chinese domestic demand to an extent. I think obviously, you know, we've been through a low point or a correction in the market in recent times, and that was, you know, in part due to uncertainty around the EV policy in China, as far as China is concerned. But I think the future pull through is when you look at, you know, what I mentioned before, the EV platforms starting to actually become reality and starting to increase, you know, overall market demand, and that, you know, should create a pull through effect in other parts of the market, not only in the battery space.
Yeah, okay, thanks, David. And so just tying that back to price, so I think Albemarle and SQM, these guys have talked about their market price, their definition of market price, falling back to what they see as maybe the marginal cost of production around $7,000 a tonne. Can I draw you on that? Is that, do you...
Yeah, sure. What they're referring to there is that there is some inventory of spodumene concentrate still on the ground in China. So, you know, what that will mean, and pointing back to the comment in the quarterly in relation to that, as demand starts to pick up, obviously we're going to reach a point with the price where it makes it viable for that spodumene concentrate to be converted into either carbonate or hydroxide, whatever the case may be. So there'll be an inflection point or a stabilisation, I think, for a period of time possibly, until that inventory is consumed and finds its way into a finished product and out into the market. So I think the references to, you know, marginal cost of production is directly related to that spodumene concentrate inventory.
Mm-hmm. So it's all about what you assume for your spodumene cost then.
Yep.
Yep. Okay, thanks. Thanks, David.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Rahul Anand of Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for the opportunity. A lot of questions have already been asked, but I think I've got two more on the cost side. Firstly, cost of goods sold. We were impacted negatively by higher cost inventories last quarter. Has that impact now gone away, and is that something that's not coming back? What I'm trying to basically compare is what's your actual cost, cash cost of production versus the COGS number that you've reported today? That's the first question. Second question is the brine grade going into the processing plant. How has that tracked over the last three or four quarters, and where is it heading? Thanks.
I will divert the first question to Neil, since he's got more accounting knowledge than I would after that. And I'll take the second one after.
Sure, thanks.
So are you looking, Raul, you're basically looking for what, are you asking what the stable cost per quarter is?
Yeah, so I mean, I didn't get the chance to check the inventory accounting, but I would assume that it was the average cost. So I wanted to firstly figure out why the big move last quarter was talked about in context of inventory. And more so, if we tie it back to the cash cost, that would be great. If I can get an indication of where the cash cost is of production is sitting versus sold.
Yes. Yeah, see, I mean, okay. So, I mean, firstly, it just depends what happens in a quarter before and what, yes, average cost is what you'd use, number one. Number two, at the end of a quarter, you'll obviously have inventory that's carried forward into the next quarter. So that'll sit in inventory. And depending what's gone on in that quarter, so if there's been a devaluation move, then it would have the effect of that devaluation move from the prior quarter, which is what occurred in Q2. There was a severe devaluation in Q1 in September, and it was sitting in inventory that was carried into Q2. If you don't have, for instance, let's say this quarter, there's no devaluation, the peso sits around 60 for the entire quarter, yes, you're not going to have that benefit of that of any devaluation. However, you could pick up an inflationary cost going the opposite way, given we have to increase salaries, for instance, which we generally do twice a year, and one of those increases takes place in January. So I don't know if that's answering exactly what you're asking.
If I ask it a different way, I guess, this quarter or the current quarter, is your production cost running ahead of your cost of sales or below if we talk about the reported quarter?
It's stable.
Okay, so broadly in line.
Yes, broadly in line, exactly.
Okay, perfect. And then the second part on grades, Martin, thanks.
Raul, it's Andrew Powell here. Could you just repeat the question? We'll have a go at answering it from our end. Martin's obviously in Buenos Aires and his line may have dropped out.
Sure. What I was trying to understand was how the input grade into the processing plant from the finished brine inventory ponds has tracked over the past four or so quarters and where we think it's headed.
Well, in general, Martin is
there. I can answer that. I'm back, Andrew. I got cut off. I don't know why.
Go ahead.
Yes. The brine into the plant has been more stable along the last three quarters. For this month of January, we're seeing a significant amount of rain, and the brine is staying in better quality than what it was a year ago. In average, we are achieving a more stable brine into the plant, and that has been the main enabler to the operational cost reduction, reduced use of reagents, and improved recovery. And that is what we are intending to do. We are trying to keep the brine concentration stable into the plant. That you've seen that also the production from quarter to quarter has been more stable, has only been affected by some maintenance periods that we had. Maintenance periods are scheduled around August and February because of the lowest evaporation periods. The next maintenance, which is, remember in August we did the overhaul of one of the main carbonation reactors. The second carbonation reactor is being overhauled during the month of February. So that will help us to reduce the amount of brine being moved during the high rainy season, in order to keep a stable brine feed into the plant. That, as said, not only enabled us to reach the expected cost performance, but will also enable us to reach the expected production forecast that we have for the year.
Right, so are we getting close to 0.75%?
Well, we never disclose those figures, Raul, but we are getting better than where we were.
Okay, perfect. All right, I'll pass it on. Thanks.
Thank you. There are no further phone questions at this time. Your first webcast question comes from Jacob Guenta with, what was the all-in cost of production in the December quarter?
Martin, I'll just pick it up to answer Jacob. So, Jacob, we reported a little over $4,100. As you'll note in the quarterly, that excludes export duties, royalties, and finance costs. So if you had to add all of those back, you're looking at approximately $5,000 a ton.
Great, thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Mr. Perez de Sole for closing remarks.
Well, thank you very much, Ben, and thank you, everybody, for joining the call. We've seen a very good and positive quarter for recovery with positive cash flows and cost reduction, which is what we've been aiming, improvements in operations and quality. We're continuing to progress with the expansion projects in Olaroz as well as in Naraja, and the achievement of long-term contracts evidences the direction we're following on the market side. I want to thank very much Orocobres, Asalesi Kukui and Borax teams for being able to achieve this performance in a challenging market as we have seen. So thank you very much, everybody, for joining, and we'll talk to you soon with the half-year results release.